You asked me what it's like to be a fan. I'm optimistic about this year. I go to the game a lot, and I had to resort to, having fun at the ballpark, even when the team is not very good. And I have my ballpark gags that all my friends that go to the game with me are sick of. But one, when I do the hat game, where it's like the three hats, and you see the ball. My favorite thing to do with that is, and I did go to acting class. So is no matter which ball they reveal, I always start swearing. I get really angry. I'm like, come on! Those guys get really mad.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week for a holiday edition. Is that what we call it? Round table?
Round table. Except it's a rectangular table.
It is a rectangular.
They can't see that.
Well, now they can't unsee it, right, Ben. That, of course, is St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports columnist Ben Fredrickson, and we are joined by a good friend and special guest, and I'm thrilled that we're finally able to do. We talked about doing what Christmas in July was when this started, and now we actually get to do it around Christmas. And of course, Greg Warren. Greg, thank you so much for taking this time.
Oh, this is awesome, man. This is. I love the podcast. I listen to. I don't think I've missed an episode in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. So are you gonna listen to this one?
No, I don't listen to anything that has anything to do with me.
You don't?
I feel the same way. It's gross. And you don't watch your shows, though?
I listen to all my shows, as I'm preparing. Okay. If I do a show, I'll listen to that show the next day and sort of make notes and everything. But, once it's out and, on a special or published, I never want to hear that material again. Every now and then I'll come across it. But I think I get played on Sirius Radio quite a bit, and I'll listen to stand-up comedy on Sirius Radio, and you should see how fast I can go to the off button as if I started. I'm like, that guy sounds rude. No, I don't want to hear that.
Well, the listeners here can find your stuff. You have a new special on YouTube called The Salesman. It's about your time as a salesman.
Yes. I out of college.
Out of Mizzou.
Out of Mizzou. I used my journalism degree to get a job selling peanut butter. I sold Jif peanut butter, Pringles, Sunny Delight, Crisco, Duncan Hines. I started in Houston, Texas.
Were it like to supermarkets? And getting primo location on the end?
Thank you for that. Yeah, because everybody, I remember it was a good job, and I was really excited about it, and I would tell some girl in a bar, I'm selling Pringles. And Like door to door? No.
You're trying to get trying to get Capstone location, right? That's part of it. Because I actually remember P&G would come recruit at Mizzou.
Yeah,
and this was a big deal. There was who's who at Moomoo Mizzou, and then there was the P&G people.
Yeah, man,
and there were the rest of us.
I recruited the athletic department. That was my job, was to try to recruit the athletic department. That's how I got to know Coach Smith.
Wow,
the wrestling coach there. And I remember telling him, I was like, "Hey, I'm not gonna be here next year. I'm quitting. I'm gonna become a comedian." He was like, "Hey, you sure that's a good idea?"
Sunny D, peanut butter, Pringles, those are staples of a Sedalian's diet. So you would have been huge.
Yeah.
Are wrestlers naturally good salesmen? You understand leverage?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Not at all.
You never had to I'll take 2 pallets of Pringles. No, you want 3, or else I'll put you in an arm.
Oh, no, no. I was not at that point. I wasn't very intimidating. I was never intimidating. It's why I never went pro. I was a little more understated, I think.
We're gathered here to talk. We're here at Sunday Best in the Central West End. We should say that. They were kind enough to open it up so we could record this podcast here. Sunday Best, great fried chicken, great location, great people. And they have a special event coming up here.
Yeah, kind of a good crossover. We're Mizzou guys talking Cardinals baseball, and the owner of this place, John Perkins, is a friend of ours, and he is pumped up about the Bragging Rights game. And if Mizzou fans are headed down to Enterprise Center to go to the game, Mizzou versus Illinois, they're doing a pregame special here at 4101 Laclede. $2 pints on Friday before the Bragging Rights game, 4 to 6 p.m. You get a $2 Yuengling pint, and you get to keep the glass. They're going to have some glasses you can take home. If you don't like the way the basketball game goes, you can throw them on the court.
I'm kidding. This is a lawsuit.
That's a joke. but the special is legitimate. You can come in and get $2 pints of Yuengling and keep the glass here at Sunday Best. And thanks to John for letting us hang out here and do the podcast here.
The Cardinals are at a spot as we record this where they need to add or want to add a couple relievers. They'll probably add one. They're thinking is they probably could add one before the holiday arrives, maybe two, but definitely trying to get some action on some contracts this week. Thus far, they've been one of the more active teams. I mean, there's kind of the Dodgers and everybody else, but the Cardinals, as far as spending it goes, they've done pretty well. Ben, where do you think they are? Does the addition of two relievers change your mind on their offseason a little bit?
Well, I think they certainly needed to add pitching, and they've added some. They need to add more. I would still like to see them say we're going to get one over the top starter, and continue to address the bullpen as of kind of shifting to the bullpen. And I don't know, people are really playing games trying to like hold Mo's weekly interviews on KMOX up to like the decoder. Did he change his tune this week?
Oh,
I'm like,
yeah.
All I know is that when I went to winter meetings, I felt like maybe they'll go get another starter, like a Glasnow. And obviously you saw what Glasnow got, and the commitment to him was kind of eye-popping, in addition to the extension that he got. I left winter meetings going, I don't think they're going to add another starter. It seems like they're really going to focus on relievers just based off the, kind of the tone of the comments. Even before they went down there, that seemed to have shifted. But Mo is doing that thing where he's kind of doing the we're comfortable with Nolan Arenado, we're comfortable with Matt Carpenter at third base kind of thing. So I can see how people are like, well, they're going to go get the pitching version of Nolan Arenado. I get
right,
wanting that.
Yeah.
That would be awesome, and I hope that happens. But I think it's going to have to be, if I had to bet today, it would be reliever. Here's the thing, though. I don't think anyone does. I'll argue this. Nobody knows what a good reliever is. Like, you know what a good reliever was.
Yeah, I mean, we tried it a few times, right? I mean, Brett Cecil was a decent reliever.
Upon arrival, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, we spent really good money on him, and there's a couple other guys that were
Gregerson,
Holland. Yeah. He was, like, the best reliever.
Yeah.
I mean, we remember Mike Matheny making the passionate plea for Greg Holland, and he showed up, and he was like Greg Polland. He was like Greg Holland's cousin who couldn't throw.
Yeah,
he was terrible.
Didn't he go somewhere late that year and beat us in the
yeah,
September?
The Royals. He went to Kansas City.
God.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
like a curse.
Yeah,
yeah.
And now
he signed
on
opening day, and it was it gets even better because that's the opening day after they had gone to Montreal, and it was in Montreal where Mike Matheny called Jordan Hicks down in Florida and said, "You're making this team," after he had not been with them 4 weeks.
Shout out Yadier Molina.
Yep, Yadier Molina on the flight to Montreal after catching Jordan Hicks against the varsity lineup there in West Palm Beach. He went to them and said, "How do you not have this guy on the team?" And so they met and they decided, yeah, you know what? He's right. How do we not have this guy on the team? So they put him on, and then on opening day, I'll never forget. Or I'm going to paraphrase it, but it's a classic Scott Boras line. He represented Greg Holland, and I spoke to him, and he goes, "The birdcage is closed." And I'm like, "That's pretty good. That's close.
Yeah.
That's close.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
close."
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so they signed Greg Holland, who like Matheny had stumped for. So we're getting this guy, and he just was. I mean, the lack of a spring training was so clear.
Terrible.
It was so clear.
I do think the encouraging thing is they're not using that playbook for relievers anymore.
No.
And Mo's talked about that. Like, to his credit, at winter meetings, he was like, "Yeah, we used to just look at," they didn't just look at this, but he used to be like, "The guy pitched a bunch of innings, he was pretty effective, that's certainty, that's what you want." And now it's almost like that's not what you want because it doesn't project. And
you kind of want a trend line where you're going to get those years.
And they're talking about how, kind of a bullpen as a whole, right? You want the fluctuation of arm angles and how this stuff plays off of each other, reliever to reliever, and that seems to make a lot of sense. Now, doesn't mean you're going to get it right.
Well, Greg, how is this for you as a fan? We're here.
He's waiting on the Nolan Arenado.
Well, that's what I wondered.
I don't blame you. You should be.
Like,
all
the moves were done early, and we're here talking about arm angles of relievers while the Dodgers are like, "Hey, man."
Printing Ohtani jerseys.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't think we were getting Ohtani. I I don't know. I would love to see another frontline starter. I guess my question is, I'm like my. I always come to you guys with like issues that my family.
All right.
Because I think because I listen to you guys and I read more than those guys that I'm the more reasonable baseball person. And my brother's just like, well, if you don't have these five number ones, you're not trying. As I'm like, you can't.
Right.
You can't. You know, like.
No. Podcast over.
Oh,
he's
no.
Right.
This is terrible. Now you're going to say my father is right that every starter should go nine innings. But yeah.
I got to talk to your dad about Bob Gibson being left off the MLB Network starting pitcher list.
Yeah, the prime nine. Are
they really?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, the prime nine, their best pitchers.
Sorry, I didn't mean
their
to derail
us. Top nine.
I wrote a column. Oh, yeah. It was incredible. That's called a slam dunk column.
Yeah, whoever wrote
someone
that
insulted
is,
Bob Gibson.
Yeah. Whoever wrote that is they just took Don Denkinger's place as the you know the most hated.
Yeah. I blame Greg Amsinger.
Did you?
I have to.
Well, he's never coming on this podcast now.
He's a St. Louis
guy.
He should have
stepped in.
Bob Costas. Narrated by Bob.
Come on, Bob. All due respect.
Yeah. Let me ask you guys this. Obviously, we need a couple relievers, right? We need a couple relievers. But are there – and this may be crazy, but some of these guys that just fell out of favor as a starter, like Dakota Hudson at one time, before he was a starter, was a pretty good bullpen arm. Like,
yeah.
Would you just be like, hey, you're going to the bullpen? Or, you know, should we get another starter? Mats might not be a bad guy there either. But
Mats is intriguing as a reliever for sure. I mean, given what he's done. You know, with him, he's pitched well. It's just been these fluke injuries.
Yeah.
And so whatever role he's in, it's fascinating. I mean, you know, you bring up a way like with Gordon Graceffo, right? Why has it all of a sudden fallen out of favor that a starter's first look in the majors is as a reliever? Seemed to work okay for Adam Wainwright, but was that just a different era?
Carlos Martinez, too.
Carlos Martinez.
He was
absolutely
2013 shutout guy, right?
Great reference. Yeah, 10 years ago, the last time they won a pennant. Not that anyone's counting, but the. Yeah, you know, and you got Gordon Graceffo, who has high-powered stuff and has stuff that plays in the majors.
Swing and miss type stuff?
Yeah,
or, really?
Or like swing under, yeah. I mean, he has upside. Now, they're thinking that upside is as a starter.
Right.
And now it just seems like, you know, almost like they don't want that to fail, so they never get the chance. It's such a weird – and the Cardinals aren't alone in this.
Yeah.
It's just an odd spot in baseball right now where starters aren't expected much. They're paid a lot, and the young guys arrive to supplement the starters that can't make the 30 starts.
Right.
So you kind of like – you kind of use the young guys as mortar to patch in between the bricks
right.
that you're laying down. But – I don't know why it went so awry that like McGreevy or Graceffo, their first look at the majors could be in helping the bullpen.
I think it's called like the Jordan Hicks predicament, where I think that if you polled the Cardinals organization with Truth Serum, there would be like 50% of people who said like we should have waited and brought him up as a starter. We may have missed a starter with an impact starter by the way that they put him in the bullpen, right?
Mm.
And then because you saw them try to do it retroactively, like
yeah.
it didn't work, like it didn't take.
Oh yeah.
And
so
the
once they go,
there was like a gravitational pull toward, well, if it doesn't work the first couple times, then does he veer back toward reliever? And it's like that Trevor Rosenthal syndrome where every spring training,
oh, yeah,
the closer says he wants to be
that.
A starter.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, if he's really good as a reliever, then it's even almost harder. So I think they're kind of like trying to stop that trend a little bit. Like maybe it's Tim Kaines who doesn't go that route. But you have to identify a guy. Like if his stuff isn't if he doesn't have multiple pitches he can throw for strikes and get outs, then and he only has two, and it's been time and time again where it hasn't worked as a starter, then I think they got to get faster about like, all right, go make a difference in the bullpen. I think like Matthew Liberatore is getting close to that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't – Zach Thompson, I think he's on that like line, but – at some point, like, you're better off veering them toward relief and, like, letting them identify as that.
Yeah.
Thompson this year, he didn't know what he was. Like, he was like, one day I'm a starter, one day I'm a reliever.
Now I'm in AAA being told to be a starter. Then tomorrow I'm back in the majors doing long guy stuff. Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to that. But as starters are expected to do less in the majors, then you're almost closing that gap with practice if you aren't, like, closing it by – by plan, right? Like if you only get 4 innings, 5 innings from your starter, all of a sudden that fifth spot in the rotation is a glorified long reliever, and that's what you're turning the young guys into anyways. It's a weird spot.
God, I was just thinking about remember when Chapman, or Aroldis Chapman, was a starter for like what?
Oh yeah, that was very early on.
Was he a starter early on?
Very early on, yeah.
It worked out for him.
Yeah,
go the really. I mean, that's the thing is, if you could be a okay starter, less than okay, but like a guy who can be a fifth. You have the stuff to be a super, like, I'd rather, you'd be better off being a kick-ass. And
eventually
reliever.
The salary is going to catch up.
Right.
I mean, that's.
Like, that's the Matz theory.
Right.
Is the salary Steven Matz got during his time to be a mid-rotation guy for the Cardinals is now equivalent with what you would pay a kick-ass reliever. So if he can be a kick-ass reliever, there's an argument to be made for, like, that's where the value is for him. But that's if you add somebody that takes that. Spot. I mean, I think they're confident Matz can surprise some people this year. Like, to your question, like, there will be somebody this year who people have written off that performs way better than people thought. I don't know if it'll be Matz. Maybe it's Zach Thompson. Like, there will be somebody who got.
Is Hudson just.
He's gone.
He's
they
done.
Let him. They let him go.
He's a free agent.
They non-tendered him.
God. Yeah,
and nobody got nothing.
Nobody,
nobody
tra-
not they
yet.
Couldn't even trade him.
Not yet.
Well, they didn't trade him.
I remember when that guy was. He was a pretty good bullpen.
Well,
guy.
his absence from this team this past year was kind of the beginning of their fall, right? He goes to AAA out of spring training, and they go on the road, and there are like two small moments in this past year really like doom the Cardinals. One. Was Packy Naughton's injury, and the other one was their choice to send Dakota Hudson to AAA because, you know, he couldn't provide them innings. Had he been a guy who could just provide them innings, they get through that turbulence of the first month, and they aren't chasing innings constantly, and they don't tumble into all these losing streaks. The Packy Naughton thing, they were about to shift possibly to a six-man rotation to survive that West Coast trip. When Packy Naughton went down, they're like, "Well, now we need that kind of the swing guy, that little that position that can go long to just kind of cover us because Packy isn't there to do it. So we're not going to go to a six man." I mean, that is where it all began. Now things got worse, and the defense played terrible, and their errors in the outfield went from singles to extra bases. All that stuff kind of compounded. But if you want like the subtle things, it was like the fact that they built their pitching staff on quicksand. The moment they optioned Dakota Hudson, that he didn't provide for them.
That's right when Ben Fentz started saying, "I told you so" on all the radio.
Well, that doesn't narrow it down.
We were talking about the pitching being uncertain. I mean,
you guys were definitely innings wise, right?
Just couldn't count on it. And not to beat up on him, but the bet on Jack was a risk, a big risk that they I think really undersold.
To be honest, DeWitt said it at Winter Warm-Up.
We asked him why didn't you go get a frontline starter, and his response was, "We have one if Jack stays healthy," and
it didn't happen.
I mean Jack's not getting paid like a frontline starter this offseason. He's getting $14 million.
Well, he got a pillow deal. He got a Greg Holland deal.
Go prove it deal.
Yeah,
and he didn't
Detroit?
Prove it last season. So that they were questionable at both ends. And it messes everything up because then you've got, and this is something I fight with fans about this offseason, like they're mad about Miles Michaelis not pitching well last year. And I'm like, he's a three, go get two guys better than him, and you've got a pretty good rotation. And they're like, there's no way he's a three. And I'm like, no, he is a three. He will pitch 200 innings, whether he's good or bad.
Yeah.
And every other season, he may be an all-star. Like, that's a three.
Yeah.
If that's not a three, then what are we doing?
It's a great.
But that's what happens when you don't have a one and two.
That's what you have.
Then your three,
I mean, look,
he gets projected as a one, and he performs like a bad three, and then everybody's mad and thinks he stinks. He doesn't stink.
One of the things
he doesn't. No.
That's exactly one of the things that the Baseball Writers Dinner was January 14th this year is they're going to have some celebration of the 2004 team. One of the subtle moves that kind of made that 100 win team was the acquisition of Jeff Suppan. Right, who was a guy who was recommended by Jim Leland, who's now Hall of Fame manager, but he was a scout for the Cardinals, and he recommended the Cardinals go get Jeff Suppan. And what did he do? He just provided quality outings. He just knew, like, one of the things last year that happened is the Cardinals unloaded their bullpen to survive the series in Colorado. They just were like, all right, we're going to win this series, but it's going to take the whole bullpen to do it. Well, good thing, you know, we got our guy, Michaelis or whoever it was, coming back for the weekend, so that'll give us some steadiness because he can give us innings. And then when he didn't, it was over.
Yeah.
But that guy is so valuable that, like, Jeff Suppan comes in, just makes his starts every day. Jason Marquis acquired, makes his starts as scheduled. I mean, they keep the trains running, and what it does is it allows you to win series, just crank them out. Yeah. You never go through the long losing streak. And that's how you win a division. But I think your question is more like, how do you win in October? That's the question, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what my crazy family, because I get in these arguments with them. I'm like, God, I wish Derek and Ben were here too.
This is a good, how does your family feel about the additions of the pitchers?
Oh, completely unimpressed. Okay. Completely unimpressed.
Is that the timing of it? Do you think anything? That's what I wonder. Do you think that has anything to do with the timing of it? Because it was done ahead of time and not like
around
shopping season.
Yeah. No, I think they just thought we were gonna. You know, if they don't know the name, or unfortunately, I think it's because they do know the name Lance Lynn. And,
yeah. Okay.
You know, you asked me what it was like to be a fan, and. I'm optimistic about this year. I think already the pitching staff we have a lot more innings. But last year I go to the game a lot, and I had to resort to, having fun at the ballpark even when the team is not very good. And I have my ballpark gags that all my friends that go to the game with me are sick of. But one. You know when I do the hat game where it's like the three hats and you see the ball? My favorite thing to do with that is, and I did go to acting class, so is no matter which ball they reveal, I always start swearing. I get really angry. I'm like, come on! I get really mad. And I sold it really, really well this year. This one old guy, I threw my hat down and I hit the old guy. And my buddy's like, what are you doing? So yeah, that's one of my games. The other game is... when the t-shirt cannon or slingshot girls get up on the thing, and everybody's
Fred Bird's team.
Yeah, yeah. I usually sit a lot, like sort of a few rows behind the third base dugout. You know,
brag.
Yeah,
that's my favorite seat in a ballpark.
Yes, I love it. Depending, I don't go all the time.
So you want to be close enough to yell at DeWitt, like, spin more.
Well, that's across the way.
Yeah, yeah. But
he's on the other side.
Yeah, he's on the other side.
First base. I'm the visiting team, and you're around a lot of all the opposing fans know. Like when Milwaukee comes down, there's a bunch of Milwaukee people there.
Sure.
But I like that. I don't know. I like that vantage point.
That's my favorite place to watch a ball game.
Is it?
Yeah.
And there's people that are just going crazy for those t-shirts. And my other favorite gag is I wave them off when they. I'm like, no, we don't, not here. No, we don't want
no t-shirts.
We don't want the shirts. Please, no. I wave them off. That's a gag that my friends are all sick of. The other thing, and this, I bet this is some comedian's joke out there somewhere, so I want to preface that, because sometimes when I'm doing what I'm doing, I'm like, that premise has got to be taken. But when they say a can of corn when it's just a lazy...
Just fly ball.
Fly ball.
Yep.
How terrifying do you think it would be if you were in the outfield and you saw an actual can of corn that's supposed to be like, it's easy, it's not a big deal? That would be horribly terrifying.
Like a jugs machine?
A steel can coming at you?
Great
like
point.
That would be, it's terrifying,
like,
right?
If you drop like a penny off of a tall building, it can kill someone. So it's like, here, catch this
can. A can of corn. Have you ever felt a can? It's very hard.
It's, yeah.
And so these, that's what I had to resort to last year at the ballpark. Since I've seen you guys, it's been a couple years since we've done this. Two years ago, I sat in green seats for the first time.
Oh,
It was
changed. I've noticed you changed.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, yeah. My buddy.
You have an air about you.
I do. Yeah. I do. my buddy that I bring out on the road, Sean O'Brien, to open for me. I was like, it was his birthday, and I was like, hey, man, you want to go to the game? He's like, I go. You want to go to the game, trust me. And it's amazing. Those things are unbelievable. And it was that game, and you guys will know, it was we played the Mets. Michaelis went pitch per pitch with Scherzer. I was right there. Mm-hmm. And then Gallegos gives it up in, I think, top of the ninth.
Yeah.
But it was – I think it was a national TV game, and it was amazing. And Michaelis pitched like crazy. Scherzer was – having a great year. And yeah, we gave it up there. But man, I don't need to do that. I was like, this could be a whole new thing. This green seats, you know, that's a great thing back
did,
there.
Did you find that you had less time for the bits because of the new rules? Did you have to adjust?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I
ask them professionally.
Yeah. I was still able to get them off. I mean, some of them, you know, the hat thing, especially with last year, I was like, when's the hat? Have we done the hat yet?
Yeah, I got to
do the hat. And then I also, my act's pretty clean, but I will say with that bit, the hat game bit where you get upset when no matter which one they reveal, if there's not kids around, I go blue. I go blue.
You go road cardinal cap.
Way more effective.
You go road cardinal cap.
Much funnier.
Yeah, yeah.
If I
screen. Are you calling out the wrong number? Is that part of it? Like, are you? If it's clear, I mean, it's very clearly two, and you're yelling 3-3.
No, I'm not calling anything out. I'm just saying.
You're just in
your
head.
I'm just trying to make people around me think that this guy's getting. One, he's so dumb he didn't get the cap, and two, he's getting so upset that he lost at the cap game. That's my gag. Yeah, is everybody's like,
that's good.
Nobody cares about the cap. I get overly upset about the cap.
It's the guy at the roulette table who put it all on green and doesn't have it work out. That's that moment, right?
Sometimes I talk about I'm gonna borrow another guy. I'll be like, man, I gotta borrow some money. I'm in deep. Yeah, so I gotta get some new gags.
So I'm actually curious about this because here's what I ask. So I told you I wrote that like layup column about, you know, MLB Network disrespects Bob Gibson. Like,
yeah.
When there's red meat on the table, you take it. But in looking up some numbers about Gibson, you know, they rank these lists since it's like from the day Jackie Robinson debuted on, which is how they should rank lists, right? Because like if you weren't playing with the best players, like then you don't get to be considered one of the best players. Like you had to do it in that era. Totally fair. I'm like looking at all these numbers. Gibson's like crazy high and everything, of course. But I'm looking like down ballot, like 50-ish, 100-ish, like all really good pitchers. And I kept seeing like Sonny Gray's name a lot.
Really?
In like innings pitched.
Yeah.
But also like important stats, like, you know, ERA, like strikeouts to walks. I mean, important things we still value now, or we value maybe more now than we ever have before. And I'm like, dang. Sonny Gray's pretty high on a lot of these lists, and I'm like, where do I feel about Sonny Gray? Because I've said this before, like I don't look at Sonny Gray and go, that guy's an ace. He's a number one of any staff he's on, no matter what. And we all have different definitions of what these things are. I think where I'm at is on Sonny Gray is I think this is his chance to prove to the world that he is that guy.
Yeah.
I think he's flirted with it, and maybe people can make the case that he is that guy. But I think like this
doesn't have the postseason success.
This is his invitation to be like, I'm the best starter on any team I'm on, and he sounds listening to him that he's more than eager to not have that opportunity for him individually, but that's his mentality. Is like he's still got a lot left to prove. I was surprised when you dig into his numbers just how not only solid but spectacular some of them are.
Is Aaron Nola an ace?
Yes, but part of that's what he's done.
In the postseason.
In October. Like,
yeah.
And I think that's why, not to go off the rails, we all agree, so it would be a bad, like that's part of why it's so obscene that Gibson got left off that list. Like, he's a killer.
Yeah.
He's a killer in the postseason. Mm-hmm. The guy,
just the one
through
season,
complete games in World Series, he struck out 17 in a World Series. Like, his ERA was like 2, and then in the postseason it was like 1. it's obscene.
Yeah. I don't know how it got overlooked. I didn't ask. Did you ask?
I'm assuming that they just had to cut somebody from the list in terms of like they were all about updating the list. They wanted to put Kershaw on.
I mean, it was pretty. It's pretty.
Well,
Kershaw's fine. I mean,
Kershaw shouldn't be on if Gibson. Kershaw shouldn't be on any list that Bob Gibson's not on. Kershaw is a postseason shrinker. I mean, he's the opposite.
And
he
got the MVP. I mean, he's got the regular season credentials.
Man, but his numbers for regular season for an extended period
of
time was so
good. We're talking about the best of the best, like. He's one of the best pitchers.
I mean, they
he's
skewed
not
modern,
one of the best
right?
Pitchers if Gibson isn't on it,
that they skewed
Bob
modern,
like
right?
Top three.
Yeah.
Like
well, Randy Johnson was one. So how is Bob Gibson not?
Yeah.
Not
like Bob what? Gibson. If Pedro Martinez is on, Bob Gibson should be on. If Pedro Martinez was on, and like there, maybe there's some similarity there in like super, super awesome like postseason dominance, like so a peak collection of years, but when you anyway, point is, I was impressed by Sonny Gray, and I'm kind of wondering, like, why isn't Sonny Gray getting more? I think it's maybe because the Cardinals, people feel like the Cardinals are saying this is the ace, this is the number one.
One is he didn't get an ace contract.
They're not broadcasting him like that, though. They're not doing that thing that they do with Dexter Fowler where they're like, he's all the answer to all the problems. But I think they're kind of underselling him, and maybe they shouldn't be.
But I think that part of it is he didn't get like that ace contract, right? Like his contract could be the first $100 million free agent contract for a pitcher by the Cardinals, and really only the second ever. And Matt Holliday, you know, he re-signed.
Yeah.
So Sonny Gray could have that, but it could. It isn't, you know, so it doesn't, like, catch all.
It fits his opportunity.
It does, yeah. But it doesn't, like, catch all the eyeballs with the headlines of, like, you know, nine-figure deal and everything like that. The other thing is, you know, he really struggled in New York. And whatever you think about, like, you know, where the temperature is set in baseball conversation, it still is kind of New York. You know, maybe that shifts to L.A. Maybe, I mean, some of it certainly has. Mm-hmm. But if you don't perform well in New York, that's going to follow you around.
Yeah.
So, Gerrit Cole had to go there and perform like he is for people to go like, oh, yeah, that guy's an ace.
Well, that's just because they thought he was cheating in Houston.
Right.
Was that going to New York or leaving Houston, though?
I mean, I think it's both. And also signing a nine-figure huge whopper of a deal.
Is that like the same in, like, I guess it is in like show business where it's like, well, they can never, if their jokes are funny here, they wouldn't be funny in New York. I'm like, I don't know.
There is,
like,
a little
people
bit
laugh
of...
in New York like they laugh anywhere in the country. Like, Eric and I go crazy about this because, like, I've talked to Harrison Bader about this.
Yeah.
Harrison Bader's from New York. He's played in St. Louis. He played for the Yankees. And he's like, and I agree with him. He's like, look, like, yeah, it's tough being in New York and tough playing for the Yankees, but also, like, St. Louis doesn't have the New York football Giants to distract them. They don't have the New York Knicks.
Yes.
Like, these guys are under a microscope as much now when there's no baseball being played as they are. Like, we're sitting here breaking down, like, Sonny Gray's numbers.
Arm,
like,
slots of a reliever.
Like, it reminds me of Tennessee, when I worked in Tennessee, and it would be, like, heat of basketball season, and, like, you call in on the radio, and the guy would be like, I want to hear about the second string punter I heard
hit
on. Like, it never stops
here for
baseball. So I would argue that, like, this idea, like, that they're not under pressure here, like, I'm not buying that. Sonny Gray will feel as much pressure to perform here as he did when he was with the Yankees. Now, it might be a different kind, and mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe we phrase our questions differently and we're not, like, as antagonistic, which I don't
I mean, that's
I've
Philly.
Heard some of those New York questions,
I mean,
and they're
Philly,
not that tough.
Philly is that. Philly, yeah. Philly is the
because
antagonistic.
Because the fans or the media?
Both. Yeah. It's both. Yeah. I mean, the a lot of the things you hear about New York are true in Philly, as far as the tone of the media coverage and how aggressive and like cross-examination, that stuff is Philly.
Is that happens in your line of work where people are like, we might be funny in Indianapolis, but put them in New York.
I mean, I lived in New York and in L.A.
Right,
and did stand-up in both. And I will tell you, like, it's those are the only two, like, when I write a joke or, you know, I'm writing it for everywhere. And I don't, people always like, is it different in different areas of the country? No, not really. Except for in New York City and in Hollywood. Like, though, it is a little different, man.
Well, how way? Well, in what way?
In New York, it's got to be a little tighter. It's got to have a little more of an edge to it. And the way that they see shows there.
So, like, pizza.
Yeah, it's
got to be a little tighter. Yeah, got a little bit of an edge to it.
A little bit of an edge. Yeah. No, the way you do shows in New York is like sort of almost every club is like showcase style.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So instead of like, hey, if you're going to the Funny Bone in St. Louis, you'll see a local MC who's a, you know, okay, and then maybe a feature, a middle guy who's doing 20 minutes that's from St. Louis, and then the out-of-town headliner. You go to New York, you're going to see... And, you know, and the local MC in St. Louis does 10 minutes, the mm-hmm. middle act does mm-hmm. 20, and then the headliner does, you know, an hour. In New York, it's like you're going to see, you know, they have 10, 15 comics on the lineup, and everybody's doing 10 minutes, and it's a good 10 minutes. I remember when I first got up there, I was there in my 40s. I had already been on TV a bunch of times, and I felt like I was pretty good. And I remember a couple shows, like, walking home being like, You know, when I said I wanted a new challenge, I didn't mean an actual challenge. I wanted to have instant success in a different geography. It threw me a little bit early on. Because, you know, I remember one time I thought I was like when you do a late night set, you know, you can pretty much go around town the night before and just run your set, you know, mm-hmm. run your 5 minutes. And I was doing Seth Meyers, and I was like, okay, I'm the man in the city, you know, go wherever I want. And I went to this club, Gotham Comedy Club, which is a really good club. And I was like, hey, I'm going to do a set. And they're like, yeah, we know. Yeah, good, great. And then I was feeling like I was the man. And they pulled me on the shoulder right before I was supposed to go up. They were like, hey, you're not going up. I'm like, wait a minute. And they were like, ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Seinfeld. I was like, okay, I see why I'm not going up. yeah. And he was running a set for the Tonight Show.
That's a little bit like Maguire on deck, and Tony goes, hey, you're not going up, and Kerry Robinson goes up. It's like that, right? How it felt?
It was actually pretty cool.
That's really cool.
I like the analogy.
Or better yet, it's whoever Albert Pujols pinch hit for and hit the grand slam in like the third inning of that game. I should know that.
Similar to New York baseball, where everybody gets 10 minutes and then they get shuffled off stage. Somebody else goes out there and tries to win for the Mets or the Yankees.
Justin Verlander. Time is
Carlos Rodon. Up, time's up. Gotta go. Frankie Montas.
Steve Cohen puts his hand on Justin Verlander. Hey, look. You're not taking the mound. We got Jerry Seinfeld.
Everybody say hi to Max Scherzer. Okay, he's gone again.
The names that you just said was what terrified me, though.
Sure.
Montas and Rodon were the two big guys that everybody wanted last year. And they didn't pitch, did they?
Mm-mm, not much.
Until they blew up. And now we'll see. Like, one of those guys will probably pitch. Like, that's just how it works. But that's...
And that scared me. I know we got to spend money, but what if we spend all this money and it's Rodon?
See, that's interesting. That's where John Mozeliak was arguing. Is his point was like, I need to start. And he was telling people, anybody who was listening, he was saying, I need to start with volume. And this is what he talked about. I need it, like, it was there out in Phoenix. He's like, I need to start with volume, and then we'll see how high we go with the other. But I got to get this, like, bedrock of innings in place. And, like, even he talked to, Bo McGinnis, the Sonny Gray's agent, and said, I want to do something first, then we want to come after Sonny. Sonny's our priority, but to make that work, I want to start somewhere. And that was with Lynn and Gibson. You know, and Gibson and Lynn, they'd been in communication. They'd been teammates before. And actually, Lance had been teammates with Sonny Gray before, too. And so there was a sense like, okay, well, are you going to sign one or both? Or sign which one? No, it wasn't both. Which one? And then they signed both. And Mo's argument was, it gave me a known quantity. That's exactly what you're like. These guys are going to pitch.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a catastrophic injury, you can't. I mean, pitching is risk.
They'll just switch, switch arms.
They'll switch arms.
Those are the guys they are. There's like, they're going to,
like, they're going to pitch.
All those guys we brought in, was it 2 or 3 years ago in the middle of the season that got us all
It's exactly that. Lester and Happ.
Yeah. It was, they just throw innings.
They just did it before the start of the season.
Everything settled down after that.
Yeah, it is so valuable. And they just decided to start there instead of until July. Yeah. But it does, but you're right. It's like not, it's so interesting because like, you just can't win, right? And there are different ways to go about it. But from a team's perspective, you can't win. You move early, and you're like, all right, hey, we're being aggressive. And the fans go, yeah, but look at the guys who are signing late, man. Don't you want to wait for some of those superstars? Or if you wait late and then you end up with nobody, then obviously you missed. It's just a weird spot to be in because contrarian points of view just rule everything.
Yeah, I mean, yes. Like my brother. It's like they're terrible. They didn't sign anybody. There's no pitching.
They've spent the fifth or sixth most money on free agent, but people don't want to hear that because there's more spending to be had out there, and they'll be lapped.
Yeah, I think there's a case without saying they've signed nobody to be made that like, okay, you've got your bulk. Like mm-hmm. you went to Costco, and I'm not, and now Sonny Gray is like not that. He's outside of that.
Yeah,
there's a case to be made that now there's an opening to take. To take that guy who's like the Jack Flaherty, that instead of saying that guy's going to go get 200 innings, which that wasn't going to happen, but if he has a great year and you have the bulk, then you've got the sizzle. Like mm-hmm. that's
that was the Glasnow thinking.
That was right. The Glasnow thing is like this guy, don't count on him to be your 200 inning guy. Count on him to be the guy who has a year like Blake Snell did last year.
Yeah,
right.
If everything goes right, and if not, well, then he's a swing guy. Like, that's the gamble left to be played if you don't want to bet on getting the bullpen right. And they may get the bullpen right and nail it, but how can any team feel like that's a given? Because no one knows what an effective reliever is going to be, and that's the and they admit this. They're like, we're going to try to be better about which relievers they get, and so they're just choosing to gamble on the bullpen more than the rotation.
Well, who's the guy that you would get? Would it be Cease or would it be your?
I mean, well, Glasnow would have been the guy that would have made sense. But then you look at what it took to get him, and you're like, okay, you know, that was
well, a significant the extension
bet,
in place,
and then the paying him
for a guy who's never pitched 120.
The Cardinals, know. There were people within the Cardinals who were excited about the idea of Glasnow going back, like, before last season even ended.
Yeah.
Like, he was not a guy that wasn't just like fan fiction theory. Like, they were like, yeah, that could be.
They workshopped what it would do.
That could be part of what we need.
Yeah, that was the idea, was, okay, how get in a position to make that
and
trade and take on that financial burden. You know, take on his salary, right. $25 million, and that'll lessen what you have to give in return. That's the kind of deal they wanted to make.
That's where I'm wary of them, because sometimes they have those ideas and then they aren't there, so then they convince themselves they never needed them. But and they've done that in the past. So my worry is that that's happening again. That they're gonna be like, no, we just need the bulk. We just needed the bulk. They didn't need the bulk, and then the thing that could put them over the top if it works out right.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like if they get the bullpen right, I would love to have the sizzle. But if they don't, they get the bullpen right.
Well, the sizzle can be in the bullpen.
Yeah. Maybe the sizzle goes in the bullpen. Because there's
who? Like you said, it's so volatile. Like, the sizzle almost has to develop.
I mean, unless it's, or if you sign
Hader.
One of these guys from from overseas who comes in and dominates. I mean, they've had good luck with. O was one of their smartest bullpen pickups in recent years. Now, that's not a hard competition to win, because there were some really bad bullpen pickups. But some they have had a good read on guys who come over well from there.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, maybe this sizzle comes in August or whatever. But you look at the first three or four weeks of the season.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you may be out of that if it's not right. I mean, it's brutal, isn't it?
Yeah, there are four games in Dodger Stadium to open up, so you'll have all of the Ohtani Fest and whatever. You're gonna face Glasnow, and you're gonna have all of the things that the Dodgers do right there in their home team. First, or their home fans first look at it.
Will Buehler be back by then?
He'll be back in some way.
Okay.
But, you know, he'll be back in some way. They're going to be obviously super cautious with him. Then from there, you go south and face Mike Schilt and the San Diego Padres, who are divesting of all their talent. But, you know, they'll still have talent there. And then you come back to St. Louis for the home opener against Manager of the Year Skip Schumacher. I mean, it's like, as far as narratives go, which I don't like casting on work.
Then you're playing the Diamondbacks?
Then you're back, yeah. Then you're back playing the National League, and then I think you got to go to Oakland.
There is Oakland. Yeah, Oakland's in there.
That's when Yadier Molina joins the team.
Right. When
and they go on a sweep. He's got that planned out today. Like, Mo, I'm going to come join for the Oakland trip.
The hotel is still in San Francisco, right, Mo?
I look forward to Yadi showing up for like the most winnable series, and then like all the fans will keep track of the record with Yadi in attendance.
Yeah. God, can you imagine the lame duck the crowds in Oakland? Or
oh yeah, I can totally imagine. I can't wait to see it.
I lived in Houston.
It's terrible.
It's Rams all over again.
Yeah, I live in Houston the year when the Oilers were gone.
This is your tell people your football why you refuse to watch the NFL.
I don't watch the NFL.
Not at all.
We don't watch it at our place either.
Can't stand it.
Listen to this.
Well, I was a giant St. Louis Cardinal football fan, as big as I am baseball, maybe even more as a kid. And then they left. My first job out of college was in Houston, and Warren Moon was down there, and I was way into it. And they left. And then I moved home, and the Rams left. So I
three times.
I hate it, But I was there when the Oilers, they had another year before they were already gone. And those games, I still remember, like, it was, they were playing the Chiefs in a preseason game or something. Maybe not even preseason, but a bunch of people went. A bunch of people came from out of town to go to this game. And they only had, like, two concession stands open.
This is at the Astrodome?
Yeah, at the Astrodome.
Oh, my gosh.
They only had, like, two concession stands open because they didn't think anybody was going to be there. And they only had, like, one gate to get in,
yeah.
And it was the we sat out there for like an hour trying to get in. It was horrible.
You met everybody, you knew everybody's name.
Yes, it was terrible, man. And Oakland's gonna be worse.
Yeah,
the coolest thing they did last year, they had that reverse boycott where they showed up to
pack
carry
the place.
Like sell the team signs, like 20,000 plus people to like demand the team get sold, which was just awesome. I wish that would have happened. Something like that would have happened.
One of the conversations around Major League Baseball was like, all right, well, if they're going to expand, like they're building their way toward expansion, now they got to figure out this broadcast thing first. They're not going to they're going to lose money on broadcast, and one of the ways they're going to make that money back is through expansion fees. Like, we can see how this all lines up, right? But they got to solve the TV thing first and then count the pennies that they lost to put into it, and then that'll be the expansion. And the question was like, well, where would be a great expansion team? Where are the two expansion teams? And Nashville is well-positioned.
Sure.
Nashville is crazy well-positioned for one. And it's like, well, the other one ought to be Oakland. You know, like, I mean, you ought to go back to Oakland because
with an owner who has some sort of relationship with the
city. You know, because you have like, Dave Stewart is involved in the Nashville thing, but he and Reggie Jackson have really tried at times to do Oakland. There's the Warriors owner there.
Yeah. Oh,
the
really?
Golden State Warriors. Their owner, you know, is there and would work with baseball or at least be interested in baseball. So you have this possibility now, whether or not the Giants permit that, who knows? But it's like, well, you should go back to Oakland and get a better ball. That ballpark used to be amazing. It used to be beautiful before
it would be the
Mount
only
Davis
pro sport.
Like closed off. And it'd be the only,
it would be the only pro sport
on
there.
That side of the bay.
Yeah, that. Montreal's the other one, right?
Montreal's another one.
Yeah.
Portland really wants, but hasn't been in position. Charlotte is discussed. I think Vegas obviously was one. They could still do like that, the Major League Baseball shell game, right? Where all of a sudden, like, the Oakland A's stay in Oakland and they get the expansion owner.
Yeah.
And the Oakland A's current owner gets the "quote unquote expansion team," like they did when they moved around Washington and Miami and the Expos, right? Wasn't that like they were all like there was an ownership switch there where it went from Montreal to Miami? So you could see, gosh, that would be messy. But I don't know. There's got to be a way. Have you been to a game in Oakland before?
Never. No. I've been to San Francisco, but not never Oakland. Yeah,
I like the vibe there. It's got kind of a soccer feel to it. But it'd be so much better if they had like just like not a football behemoth stadium.
Yeah,
and had that view of the mountains there that they used to have.
It reminds me of the I went to a game right before the Twins moved.
The Metrodome.
It was like Bad News Bears. They had like banners that looked like 7-Eleven, you know, has a hot like is a deal on hot dogs or something like that. Like it looked like they just put it up. You know, it was like vinyl banners coming down. It was terrible, man. It was awful.
I hope the owners do something to do right by Oakland because this has been. You feel like, look, it's all business, it's all money. But like watching the way things went down with the NFL, you just felt like, golly, it made me like baseball more actually because I felt like some of the ownership in baseball was just a little more like. I feel like there would be more baseball owners who stepped up and said, this isn't right.
Yeah,
than there was in the NFL.
You think that.
And then they rip Oakland out and throw it in Vegas. And it's like you read into the details of it. And not that people listening care that much, but like they had a plan that would have given money. They had some stuff in motion that was kind of similar to what St. Louis
really
had in trying to keep the Rams.
Really?
Nationally, it just gets – told is, well, Oakland didn't try to keep the team. Like, it's not
true.
No,
they
true.
Did. It's
like,
not
it's
true.
It's not true that St. Louis didn't try to. St. Louis tried to keep its team.
It's very similar.
So
and
I have
they had a plan. The owner just kept wanting more. And he wanted promise of he wanted to
the Vegas site is small, too small for a stadium.
Yeah.
There's some real problems. The teachers union in Las Vegas is like suing the the public money aspect of it because they think it's like not good for the community. I think it's like affecting their pension. I don't know the fine details of it, but there's like some real resistance in Vegas that no one talks
and
about.
And it's possible that there won't be anybody at some of the ball games because, you know, like, are locals going to go in summer?
45 degrees. And like,
are,
your
can
shoes
you count
melting
on
the sidewalk.
Tourists cycling through to go?
No.
No, because they want to go to shows, not ball games,
you
right?
No, you can't. It's.
Have you done shows in Vegas?
Yeah, yeah.
What's that crowd like?
It's kind of fun, but it's mostly people from out of town. Yeah, I do shows at the MGM. Where, Brad Garrett, you know, he has a comedy club there.
Yeah.
He's this great guy in it. But it's, I like gambling, so I on my little spreadsheet, it's like, you're going to make this much money, and I'm like, I'm making no money. Like,
doubling that.
All of that funnels to gambling. So over the years, I've weaned it down.
Are you going to be, out there when Major League Baseball now makes Las Vegas its home for these awards things? Because they had the rollout of
this
past weekend.
You should, like, introduce one of the awards.
Yeah, man. That'd be great.
Make that happen.
I think I'm there, like, Labor Day or something. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they're going to start doing meetings out there. It sounds like. Yeah, the GM meetings always out there, and then awards. Because they did the All-MLB team awards out there, and they've had attempts to have the Gold Gloves out there before, but they want to make it like a destination.
Yeah.
And then awards show.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Like
okay,
ESPYs,
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
like
yeah.
They have Major League Baseball.
Like
wants
the
to
ones
do that.
That Gibson got left off of.
Yeah. I don't think they want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to be there for that. Yeah. I want to be the.
You got to send your dad my column. He'll love that. He'll think I'm like the greatest.
Oh, yeah, man. Which, can I ask you this question?
Sure.
I kind of know the answers, okay, but I just don't articulate it all that well when they get me riled up. But, like, why could those guys all go in 9 innings back then? Why and now they can't? And is it – I think I mostly know the answers, but I'd love to hear it from guys that are smarter than I am when it comes to baseball.
I mean, the three things stand out. One, it's how they're developed. Like, this is a big thing that Scherzer and Wainwright and some of these guys actually openly talk about. And Wainwright, now that he's retired, and Scherzer with his role in the union, they've brought this up before. Is if you cannot be so protective of pitchers in the minor leagues and have them go 5 innings there, and then when they get to the majors and everything is harder, expect them to go 7. It's the other way. So if you are developing short-term pitchers, then you're going to get short-term pitchers. You're putting a governor on them already, which is true. That teams aren't saying it, but one way to keep costs down is to not have 200-inning pitchers because you don't have to pay that high salary. Pitchers become more, what's the word, fungible?
Yeah, interchangeable.
Cogs. So you limit their – so whether or not they're doing it, it's just –
Everybody's a reliever.
It's one more example of like a topic that comes up a lot here on the podcast is of the tail wagging the dog. The analytics went from giving us great information on how to evaluate and predict future performance. Now, somewhere along the way in the last 20 years, now they started dictating performance, not just evaluating and projecting. It started dictating. And so third time through, right?
Yeah.
Like now third time through for some teams is you're out.
Yes.
It used to be like 100 pitches and you're out. Whenever those 100 pitches came, that was an arbitrary thing that was kind of worked. It kind of felt right. Third time through, now there are analytics that tell us this, that show this. And some manager will be like, yeah, but you got to feel the game. You got to, like, this guy has his stuff or this guy, you know, that team seems off. Well, no, third time through, you're out. That is limiting, like, it's just putting a ceiling on what can be expected of a starter. That has the impact of putting a ceiling on what they have to spend on a starter. And then it puts a ceiling on how you develop starters. And it's those three things that are kind of creating this culture of 5 and go. And you hear it from starters. I've talked to starters. you know, through the recent years, and they talk about, like, you know, how do you get a win? Like, because they're kind of still caught up in this notion that a win still matters, though we don't use it in the same way. But I like to get a win. I want to get a win. I want a winning record, everything like that. It's like, cool, we'll pitch more than five innings. Like, it's pretty simple. Oh, they're not going to let me do that. What? Like, you want to win, pitch deeper into a game.
Right.
That's a great way to get a win for you personally.
Sure.
And it helps the team.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting because baseball's now got this culture where this, like, this cap is put on what's expected from a starter, and they're developed to meet that cap, and the analytics the analytics support that cap, and so pitchers now buy into that cap.
Yeah.
And it's not working.
There's an injury thing too where people have convinced themselves, well,
he'll
get hurt if he pitches more. Well, And maybe some of that
self-fulfilling prophecy.
Maybe some of that's true.
You're right. Like, you don't develop them to pitch more; they're gonna get hurt.
And in Bob Gibson's day, like when he's arm twinged, they didn't like put him in the MRI tube. Like he was like, "Oh, let's put some stuff on it." And like Sandy Koufax couldn't move his arm. I'm like,
well, and they didn't have the MRIs and everything.
They pitch through stuff that guys now don't pitch through.
Right.
And also, like, I'm not saying like this isn't like, oh, guys need to be tougher. Like, I'm not telling guys what they should or shouldn't do. But guys, back then, guys would pitch through all kinds of stuff. I mean, Bob Gibson pitched to three hitters on a broken leg. Like, that doesn't happen now. Like, the second something doesn't feel right, this is a multi-million-dollar investment.
Because so much money is at stake.
Like, the team doesn't want that guy to go pitch with an arm issue. They want to get him checked out, and they want to make sure they can try to keep him healthy. So now, like, there's just a whole – it's just a different world where they're almost, like, look at it like – not to compare pitchers to machines, but, like, a finely-tuned machine – like a finely tuned Formula One race car, like you're not going to run it on low oil.
Yeah.
Like back in the day, they're just like, just hammer the pedal, you'll be all right. And it led to amazing things.
One of the things that I find interesting, it goes back to your Jordan Hicks question, right? Like the Cardinals reassessing how they use Jordan Hicks was, you know, if they go back to that time, which we spoke about in that phone call in Montreal, and go, well, is it better for him to be up in the majors or sign Greg Holland and not have him be in the major and work as a starter? Like, they can kind of go back and audit that and look at it. But in the end, they don't know how that turns out either.
Right.
It's the Strasburg in the playoffs against the Cardinals, right? The Nationals choose not to pitch Steven Strasburg against the Cardinals. And it's this self-fulfilling prophecy because there is no parallel universe that we can go, well, how'd it work out if he did pitch?
Yeah, it's Randy Arozarena would have been done this here.
Well, even worse. It's even worse because
Sandy Alcantara would have developed like he did with the Marlins here. Well, maybe they couldn't develop.
But it's even worse because the Nationals can say, well, we would have banked on an injury earlier. Like, it's not just like, oh, well, we don't know if he would have performed here. It's like, we could guarantee that he'd miss a year because of an injury.
Maybe not.
But you don't know. Maybe not. But they convince themselves of it, that it becomes a self-fulfilling. We are skipping him here. We are not using him here for his long-term health. There is no way to step in and go, you're wrong. You sound like a heel or you can't prove it or whatnot. So these teams make these decisions that are kind of bulletproof from criticism because you can't prove them wrong.
I mean, it affects guys too, whether they say it or not. Like if you're a pitcher, like if you're a runner and they tell you the race is 5 miles long and then all of a sudden like they tell you like, well, you can go five, but really it would be safer if you go four. Like,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
As soon as you hit 4 1/3 of a mile, you're like, I don't know about this. I don't feel like 4 1/2. You're like, oh, I'm risking it. Like that stuff trickles down into guys' heads. I mean, they're people.
Congratulations, you've reached the midpoint of this Holiday Best Podcast in Baseball Marathon. You're halfway through the conversation recorded at Sunday Best there in the Central West End, featuring comedian Greg Warren and St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports columnist Ben Fredrickson. You can, of course, again, see Greg Warren's special, The Salesman. It's on YouTube, and spoiler alert, in the next part of this episode of BPIB, we discuss that he's coming to St. Charles in April to do a show. So he'll be back in St. Louis area to do one of his shows there in April at the Funny Bone. Part two of this podcast is coming up shortly, where we begin by talking about just which of the current Cardinals would be the best college wrestler. Greg Warren has insight on what it takes to be a successful college wrestler.
and much, much more in part two of this best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Happy holidays, and look for part two of this holiday BPIB dropping shortly, right after this one. Seriously, right after. I'd be surprised if it's not there already. It's coming right away. I'm just going to load one, edit the other one, and then load it. So you have it there for all of your long-distance car rides this season. Happy holidays. Enjoy the new year. Thank you.